Meepletown, before we get started, I just wanted to let you know that the Golden Geek Awards on BoardGameGeek.com are now available for nominations. We would love to have your nominations, so please log on and vote for Meepletown today. Hello, residents of Meepletown. This is Dean.
This is Darren.
And today we're going to be talking about a couple games we've been playing lately, Marvel Dice Throne and Panorama. And we're going to do a showdown between Scarface 1920 and The Godfather Corleone's Empire. So thanks for joining us as we seek to build community through board gaming. This is episode 169.
Residents of Meepletown, what is your favorite mobster slash gangster movie? I know this is a timeless question. It's one for the ages. It's plagued humanity for eons. But what is your favorite mobster slash gangster movie? And I know that's a broad question. It stems long periods of time, anywhere from the prohibition here in the U.S. in the 1920s all the way up to modern day. And that can even take place in other parts of the world, not just here. And I know there's been lots of movies. For some reason, this has captivated the imagination of at least people here in the States for a long time. So I'm very curious, since we're talking about Godfather and Scarface games today, what is your favorite mobster slash gangster film? Dean, I turn the question to you. Good sir.
Well, I don't know if I really have a good answer for this. I'll say, if you just want a quick answer, I'll probably say Godfather. I really like the Godfather series. But I honestly don't really like a lot of that theme. I don't like a lot of violence, honestly, which is weird because, I mean, Godfather does have that, but not in the same way that some of the other popular ones like Goodfellas. Like, I saw that years ago, and some of those scenes are, you know, just etched in my brain that I don't love. Yeah, so I'm not a big fan of violence in general. I mean, this is in a lot of areas. Like, I don't really like to watch boxing or MMA or anything like that because I don't know. It just makes me feel weird. I don't like it. But I do like Godfather for some reason. I don't know why. Maybe even nostalgia in there somewhere. I'm not sure. So I'd probably say that, or maybe Good Feathers from Animaniacs. I really like,
yes, like them. I love the Good Feathers. You're talking to me? Yeah, the Good Feathers are great. But yeah, you know, I can agree with a lot of your answer there, Dean. I too am not a huge fan of like violence in movies. But I do have to ask, though, you do play lots of violent board games. And so, you know, maybe this is a Meepletown Hall topic for later, but there's lots of violence in your games. I do believe your favorite board game was, what's the name of your favorite board game of all time?
Blood Rage. It's not a very violent game. Right. It's not.
Nothing but killing and pillaging.
They're bringing cookies and sending them off. Yeah.
Is that the Christmas overlay of Blood Rage?
Ooh, a retheme. Talk to Eric Lang about a retheme of Blood Rage. I like that. But you don't like the violence either.
I'm not a huge violence fan. But two, I probably agree with you, though. In this genre of film, I do really like The Godfather. The series is fine. The second one is good. Third one, eh. The first one is really good. It's less violence, like where you see it, but it's more very artful and well done storytelling. In such a way, it's just so clever, you know. And I think some of the things we'll be talking about in the games today too, we'll be talking about just how clever they are, perhaps. But The Godfather as a film would be up there. Maybe after that, The Untouchables, just because I love Sean Connery as this old beat cop who's teaching a young Elliot Ness a thing or two as they are going after Al Capone. Again, we're talking about Scarface, Al Capone, those types of games. So fitting, maybe, that my two favorite gangster movies would be The Godfather and The Untouchables.
I've not seen The Untouchables. I need to look into that. I like Sean Connery. And I like, here's the funny thing too, is like the realistic version of that. Well, okay. This can go a lot of different places, I guess. I'm intrigued by the 1920s mobster era stuff, you know, prohibition era, I mean, and, you know, all that. I will say, though, in Tennessee, we're dealing with a lot of gang violence, specifically in Memphis. I don't know if you knew this. I was just reading this morning that Memphis is, it's got a lot of violent crimes going on. A friend of mine dealt with some of that, actually got held at gunpoint for, in a carjacking last year. And so they're dealing with a lot of that. So the realistic part of that is really sad to me, really sad. I hate it so much. And it is, you know, obviously it's 1920s versus now. It's different. It's almost like fictionalized. I can go down a really weird path. When you're looking at the 1920s era, we almost can fictionalize that because it's so far off, so far removed, 100 years now. Mm-hmm. But it actually, you know, a lot of people were really impacted and hurt and killed and all of that. That you know, those things actually happen. So yeah. I guess if I really start to dwell on it too much, maybe I'm going down a dark path. Maybe we just need to talk about board games. But, it makes me sad.
Oh, yeah, for sure. And I think we do the same thing with piracy, too, and pirate games and piracy and how it still exists and those types of things. And even, you know, you're talking about that type of gang violence there in Memphis. We still have organized crime families, at least here in the States. New York City still has five crime families, which the Godfather is patterned after, and so is the board game. So, yeah, those things do exist. We are talking about real people and real stories and real violence. So, yeah, maybe there's something there we should pay more attention to. Maybe at some point. I don't know if now is that time, but no, you are right. It does actually bring up those really good questions that need to be explored.
Yeah, we're going to explore the board gaming part of things today, which is, you know, sorry Meepletown for bringing us to a really dark and sad place, but you know, there's a lot of truth in the things that actually happen. So, speaking of truth and things that actually happen, maybe we should talk about some board games we've been playing lately. Wow, I'm blowing it up on this episode. Crushing it.
Let's do it. Let's talk about some games, Dean. What have you been playing that's not violent at all in any shape, form, or fashion?
Well, half of my family, my wife and my oldest son, have been out of town. And so my youngest and I have been playing a lot of games. But really, we spent a whole day almost playing Lorcana, building Lorcana decks, going to get Lorcana packs, lots and lots of Lorcana. But in the midst of all that, we've been playing a couple other games, one of those being Marvel Dice Throne. This is a game that was released a couple years ago in 2022. And Dice Throne is a game that's been out a while. Basically, to kind of give you a gist of it, Dice Throne in general is a typically head-to-head. You can play with more players, but really two players is kind of where it's at. Go head-to-head, you're rolling Yahtzee style. You roll your five dice, and you're trying to get these different symbols to match up with these different abilities on your player board to be able to attack the other player or get these little tokens or lots of other things that can happen. But just know that you're trying to unlock abilities based on your Yahtzee style dice rolling. You also have cards that you're playing that give you special abilities, and you can upgrade the different action spots on your player board. This is the Marvel version, and Marvel version, obviously, you're playing with different characters. The base set has, I should have been looking at that. I think it's Thor, Loki, Spider-Man, and Scarlet Witch were in the base box of this one. And so that's it. You're just going head-to-head till you knock the other player out, get 50 hit points, and once you knock them out, you win the game, which I lost the game against my son. It was really close, though. I think I probably would have won on the next turn. But that is that's that game. Have you played Dice Throne before? Any variations of this?
Yeah, I do own all of the Marvel Dice Throne stuff thus far and have pledged for the X-Men Dice Throne when it comes out, as well as the co-op expansion. I'm a pretty big fan of this. I think it's a lot of fun. I found that kind of, you know, I always heard people say, this is so easy to teach, and you just bring it out, you open the trays, and boom, you start rolling and playing, and you teach as you go. That was not my experience. I found the rule books very confusing in a lot of ways and not very clear. It's kind of a general rule book. If you notice, like in your Marvel Dice Throne, it uses like the rule book from the original game. And so it doesn't necessarily explain all some of the intricacies of the Marvel characters, even though each character has their own card that explains their rules. It's not always the clearest. And so we had to do a lot of looking up stuff at the very beginning. But once we figured that out, I love the Yahtzee mechanic. I love King of Tokyo. I love Marble Dice Throne. You're just rolling and re-rolling, trying to form sets and knock people out. It's really fun. It's cute and clever and can play pretty quick. We've enjoyed our time with it.
It did play quick. That was my experience with the rule book too. This is my problem with my experience with Dice Throne. With this one specifically, it's been years since I played the other Dice Throne, and somebody taught me. I didn't actually read the rule book, but I was like, why is this unnecessarily difficult?
Yes,
for a game that is supposed to be simple, that you do just pull out and play. That wasn't our experience either. I felt like it just seems like that could have been so much better. Dice Throne, I don't know. Verdict's still out for me. I don't love this game. If I'm going to, I like it. And we might keep it if my kids like it. I don't know. We'll see. If they don't, I'll probably get rid of it at some point because it's not one that I'm just super excited to get out. But you know me, I love Yahtzee. I love that dice mechanic of, you know, rolling, re-rolling, keeping what you want. But given the option, I'd rather play King of Tokyo. I love King of Tokyo. And this is, I mean, two-player, I guess you're not going to do that. If you're just playing two-player, Dice Throne might be the way to go. I don't know. I'd like to play this a little bit more. So far, it's fine. It's okay. But people love this game. I don't get like the full-on love of this one, but I understand that it's fun. I guess it's just fun.
Yeah.
For other people, it's okay for me.
So on your past player purchase scale, where would you put this one then?
Well, personally, I'd probably put it on a pass.
Okay.
But I would say probably play if I'm like shouting this to the masses. I think people should give this a chance, especially if you like that mechanism. If you like King of Tokyo, which I do, you might really like this one as a two-player version of that. But for me, if I can get more people, I'd rather play King of Tokyo any day.
Yeah, no, I get that. For me, this is only a two-player game. I don't think I would play this with multiple, maybe one day. But I just love it. I want to play a quick game with two players, sort of like Unmatched. But if I don't want to play with cards, but I want to just chuck some dice, this is the one that I would go to. Though it is interesting, though, there are some combos that just naturally come up more. You know, just the odds of dice. And numbers come up regularly, certain symbols come up regularly. And so it's almost, in some ways, a push your luck game. Do I really want to go for that big one or just kind of settle for these easy ones and just sort of chip away at somebody's health? So,
yeah. And I think part of that is why it's not as interesting to me, Darren. You do have the numbers on there, which makes it more interesting. Okay. Because you can get a small straight or a large straight. So that part is kind of interesting. But it's not as interesting outside of that, because it's like, okay, let's get a bunch of these symbols, as many as you can. It's less interesting than Yahtzee, I think, because you have so many of the same symbols on your dice. I would rather have a 1 in 6 chance of getting all those, and it feels more Yahtzee-esque, and you can have more options on there. Like getting a full house feels cooler, I guess. It is interesting that I think I would rather play Yahtzee because of that piece of it. People are yelling at me right now.
I'm about to be one of them.
This is a purchase for you, right, Darren?
It is. It is a big purchase because I've purchased it and I've purchased more of it. I think the card play is the big thing there that helps out, because some characters have certain types of cards that are more interesting than others, but the card play and some of the bonuses and activities you get from that make it more interesting. Like Doctor Strange, again, it's been a while since I've played it, but Doctor Strange or Scarlet Witch have their spells that they can do. And Yahtzee does not have Doctor Strange or Scarlet Witch or anything like that. So
I bet there's a Marvel version of Yahtzee is my guess. I don't know. I have to look that up.
It's called Marvel Dice Throne.
But people like it. I think I'll like it more the more we play if my family gets into this one. We'll see. I think my youngest did like it. I don't think he loved it, but we'll see.
The game that I've been playing recently, again, always playing, you know, Frosthaven, always playing Gloomhaven, Jaws of the Lion. We have regular meetings of that. And one of these days we'll set up a segment just to talk about those campaigns once we've gotten further along, maybe. But one that I got to play recently that was a review copy, one that was sent to us from Sparkworks. So this is a game that was from 2021. And it's a 1 in 6 player card drafting panorama building game, Panorama is 1 to 6 players. And so just so you know, it plays differently at 1 and 2. There's a solo variant. There's a 2-player variant. The real game that it advertises anyway starts at 3. So from 3 to 6, it's a semi-cooperative game in that you are helping build 2 panoramas with those on your right and on your left. Imagine looking at the table. And if I'm sitting at a table of 4 people, there is a panorama that I am working on between me and the player on my left and between me and the player on my right. And they are working on 2 panoramas, the one between me and them and the one between them and the player on their right or left. So it's you're working on 2 panoramas at the same time, hence semi-cooperative. There's 2 decks of cards, though. One is a dusk deck and one is a dawn deck. Dawn? Dawn. Dawn.
Struggling today.
Well, there's so many different ways to say these words. So, and my family makes fun of me sometimes of the way that I say them. I have a brother named Don. It's not Don. This is Dawn. That's what we're going to go with.
I'm hearing the exact same thing. So.
Shut up. Nobody asked you. So at the beginning of the round, you're going to be dealt a hand of cards, and everyone selects a card from their hand and they put it face down. And in turn, they will reveal that card and place it either on their left on that panorama or on their right on that panorama. And as these cards are flipped up, the landscapes that you attach them to must match. There's like mountains and buttes and mesas, and I don't know the difference between any of those. And there's just flat landscape or trees or what have you. You have to match the landscapes up. If the landscapes do not match, you have to play the card. You just play it face down. So it's kind of like a wild card in a way that you can connect other cards to it, any card. It's just not going to score you any points. Because at the bottom of each card, there's also these icons. They're going to tell you how much that card will score and how it will score. So like maybe it's a moose that needs an animal card on either side of it. You're going to score 2 points for each animal card on each side of that moose. Or maybe it's a watchtower card that needs a variety of cards on either side of it. So either way, you're going to keep doing this in turn until everyone's panorama is big enough that the round ends. And then you do the whole thing all over again with the Dawn deck.
Dan.
The Dan deck. And the Dawn deck is a lot more interesting, I feel like, than the Dusk deck. So you do all that again until you have 2 complete panoramas on either side of you. And then you're going to count up your points, and the most points wins. Now, in the 3-plus player game, there's also these awards that you can score. There's things like most trees, most foxes, or most whatever. There's a bunch of different awards. You're going to draw 4 randomly at the beginning of the game, and you'll score extra bonus points for those. So there's that little bit of variety that sounds fun. We played it mostly at 2-player, because in the 2-player game, you're just building your own panorama. You're still going to build 2, a dusk and a dawn, but you're just going to work on your own. There is a common market row in the middle of the table that you take turns flipping cards out on, and you're taking turns choosing from that row and adding them to your panorama. So a little bit simpler there. You're just working on your own. And I've heard people say that this is not really the way to play. The way to play is the other way. My wife and I really enjoyed the 2-player version of this. I was really shocked how much I liked this. I did not think I would. I'm going to give this one a play. For sure. If you like simple card drafting, if you like beautiful art, the art is by Dan May, who's done lots of games. Very lovely. It's very light. It's very lucky. A little bit of tactics in there, but it's a fun little card drafting, tableau building kind of game that you can play very quickly if you just need something at the beginning or the end of a night. It's fun. It's not bad. That's Panorama. Obviously, you haven't played this one, but does that sound interesting to you now that someone has?
No, I actually did get a play of this. I did enjoy this one from what I remember, and it is really pretty. It's just one of those, there's so many of these type of card games out there. I mean, it's unreal. And we get sent a lot of those small card games. And does it stand out above the rest? Probably not for me. Other than the art is really pretty. The gameplay is fun, but you know, there's lots of fun card games out there. So that's kind of where I'm at on that one. But yeah, I'm glad you like it. Glad it's working out to stay in your collection, maybe.
Yeah, maybe. We'll see. Space is at a premium right now. But I think it is that semi-cooperative thing that I'm still not sure how I feel about that part. We're working on this panorama together, and we're going to score based on that. I'm not sure I like that one. I think I'd rather, again, just play it 2-player. And just knock out a quick game. And, oh, cool, that's pretty. Let me take a picture of that and send it to my friends.
Yeah. Yeah.
That is Panorama.
Ladies and gentlemen, boys and girls, this is the moment you've been waiting for, where we will pit similar games against each other and each decide which one is the best. This is the Showdown in Meepletown.
All right, Meepletown, we are here to talk about a couple of gangster movies. Not movies. A couple of gangster board games. One of them is based on a movie. The other one is based on also a movie slash real life events, I guess.
Yeah.
So first, we're going to do a showdown between these two. I'm just going to give a brief overview of Godfather first, and then we're going to talk through that, and then I'll do the brief overview of Scarface 1920, and we'll talk about that, and then we'll compare the two. Does that sound good, Darren?
Let's do this.
Let's get dangerous.
Dangerous. There we go. That was it.
All right. So Godfather Corleone's Empire is a game that was released in 2017. This is an Eric Lang design from Command Global Limited as the publisher. And this game is going to be played out over a series of rounds, and it is a worker placement game. A little bit different than some of your normal worker placement games. You have these family members that have a round base, and then you have these thugs that have a square base. If you put the thug out onto the board, they're going to go shake down the front of a business, which means they're going to get a better action at a specific location. If you send a family member out, they're going to go on the edges of these different areas of New York, and they will shake down the backs of the businesses, all of the businesses that they are attached to, that they border with in those different areas. So they're going to be taking multiple actions, especially as the game goes on and new locations come out. There's going to be more opportunities for that, for more spaces for them to take. So you're going to be taking actions like taking cards, which are your weapons or your booze, or if you're lucky, getting narcotics, which is, remember, we're talking about a board game, not real life, but the narcotics is like a wild resource. And what did I say? Weapons, booze, and what was the other one? We were just talking about the
blood money.
Blood money. There we go. So you can get those different cards. You're going to be using those cards to complete jobs throughout the game. When you complete a job, those are going to allow you to do lots of stuff. Take out other players, steal money from them. The list goes on. Mobster type things that you're going to be doing. After you've played through the round of all of your worker placement part, you are going to have you're going to compare the influence in the different regions. And so after I do that, I'm going to take my influence marker and put it in that region, so that now, Darren, when you go to place a thug and take an action in that area, I'm going to get the benefit that you get, because you know what? I control that area. You are then going to play through those series. You're also going to be drafting these different allies and getting those cards into your hand, discarding cards because you have a very strict hand limit in this game. You're through that. You're going to be suitcasing money, which is going to be kind of safe, kind of safe money. It doesn't take up spots in your hand, and it is in your suitcase, but it could potentially get stolen as well. At the end of the game, you're going to get, you're going to add up to see who has the most money, and that player is going to be the winner. You're going to look at the money that's suitcased in your suitcase. You're going to be looking at areas that you control. If I control this area, I get $5. You control that area, you get $5. So $5 for everyone that you control. And then you also compare the jobs that you've completed. There's different colors, and whoever has the most of one type of job is going to get a $5 bonus as well. Whoever has the most money is going to be the winner. That is the basic gist of this. Again, worker placement, area control, all that good stuff going on in this one. Is that good enough, Darren?
Yeah, it's sufficient.
Sufficient. Okay. Now, we're going to talk about the art and components on these two, not like full on reviews, but I do think they're worth mentioning in both of these. So, what did you think of the art components of Godfather Corleone's Empire?
Yeah, that's That's really interesting because I feel like that was sort of a mixed bag for me in this one. The cover art, beautiful. This picture of Don Corleone from the Godfather movie with his cat. You know, if you've watched the movie, it opens with him talking to people on the day of his daughter's wedding and, you know, doing favors and stuff for them. And so it's got that picture on the art, and that's gorgeous. And the art on the board, I feel like, is it shows sort of the different boroughs of New York City. You know, the board art is very cool. The miniatures, you know, it's CMON miniatures, you know, and they're very nice. They're lovely. But where it got, oh, and the suitcases, there's metal suitcases that you can open and close and keep your stuff in.
Yes.
You know, those are really,
really
cool.
Nice.
I've got one really big negative on the art and graphic design, but before I do that, what about you and your thoughts on arts and components before I drop my negative there?
I'm probably going to steal some of that from you, honestly. We'll have
go
the same thoughts.
Okay.
The miniatures are great. I really like the miniatures. I like that you have the colored bases on all of those. Really easy to see when you're looking out on the board. The graphic design for everything, I think, is laid out really well. Mm-hmm. I think this jumps into gameplay, I guess, or another area, but I think with that design, the gameplay itself becomes easier. You know, this is a game that I play. I've mentioned this on the show before. I play this game multiple times every year over this one weekend where I get together with a bunch of friends and we play this game multiple times. You know, when you come back to a game only once a year, even if you've played it a ton, there's some things that you're like, ah, what is this again? I feel like the in my experience, the graphic design helps with being able to recall some of the information that might be kind of lost otherwise. What I don't like is the flimsiness of the cards. I've sleeved these, so I guess it's not that big of a deal. Mm. And they do fit in the box sleeved, although you'll need to put the cards into the suitcases to kind of store them in there. But it's fine to do that. I don't like that you have all the same art on the cards. That's really frustrating to me because you look through the rule book is beautiful. I mean, all mm-hmm. of that art throughout going back to what you said with the box cover, the rule book is nice just to look through. There's lots of pages that have like full color illustrations in there that look really pretty. Why would you not put more of that on the cards and make it look cooler is beyond me. Maybe I know it's expensive. Art is expensive, but I just wish they would have gone that extra mile to make this a little bit better.
Yeah, the card art is so ugly. I mean, it's functional. It's very utilitarian. You know, when you're talking about the cards for the resources, the guns, the blood money, the narcotics, and the booze. You know, the only thing that I can think of why everything else looks so beautiful, but those cards are so disappointing, is that this was not a Kickstarter from CMON. This was a straight-to-retail game. And so maybe, like you just said, the art is expensive. Maybe they're like, okay, we can just get by with this, and that'll be okay. So again, functional, yes. Beautiful, no. If I could change anything, it would be that. It would be the cards themselves. They're not very appealing to the eyes.
Yeah, they're not. But the control markers are cool too. I didn't mention that, but I like those. They're kind of like Ethnos control markers. They stack on top of each other, which is nice. Mm-hmm. The insert is pretty nice too, even though everything kind of falls out once you put it on your shelf.
I've not had that because I stick all the cards in the suitcases and the miniatures uh-huh. have the plastic thing over them. I've not had anything fall out of my box. Maybe you're
it's
just
the control markers. The control markers will fall out. If you stack it not like horizontal, if you stack it vertical, the control markers eventually will fall out.
Interesting. I've not had that. All right. Well,
maybe you have a better copy of it than I do.
Maybe I do.
What about the gameplay, Darren?
You know, you have talked about this game so much and had built up the hype for it so much. I could not wait to play it, especially being someone who loves the movie. I was really impressed with, and Eric Lang has a way of doing this. Has a way of giving you a streamlined area control game in a way that's really fairly simple to teach anyone and simple to play. And like you said, easy to come back and remember the rules. And yet there still be lots of depth of decision. I really enjoy, again, I've not played all of his area control games. I've played Blood Rage. I've played Ankh. I've played this one. Maybe there's some other now. Those are the main ones that come to mind. But those are three just phenomenal games, I feel like. And I'm going to put this up there with them, and the fact that the gameplay is so easy to come back to, the worker placement, knowing that you've got two different types of workers you can put out, the thugs or the family members, and they're each going to do similar but yet different things. And the timing of that is going to be really important, and how and when you gather your resources can be crucial, because you're trying to accomplish jobs or do certain things, but you're also trying to do it before somebody else does, because you know there's a car bomb out there somewhere, especially if you see somebody collecting too many guns. You're like, oh man, I got to get my stuff here before they blow everybody up in this area. I'm just really impressed with just the simpleness, but yet the depth of the worker placement, the gathering of resources, the completing of jobs. It was really a lot of fun.
Yeah. It's so cool. This is hybrid through and through. It feels so thematic. Mm-hmm. Thematic in a different way. We'll talk about this during Scarface 1920. Thematic in the sense of the interaction with each other is very thematic, because like mm-hmm. you just said, you're holding on, somebody's holding on to a car bomb. I've seen you take a bunch of weapons. It's got to be you, or multiple people are. That last act, in my experience, often ends up being quite the bloodbath, because everybody's just like taking each other out all over the place, and it's thematic. Okay, it has the mafia theme. It does not have the Godfather theme. I'll say that it has the name of Godfather, but there's nothing Godfather in this game. Okay, you're giving me the face, Darren. You disagree.
Well, no, you're right. There are lots of names and things, like some of the names of the cards, like take the cannoli.
You know?
So like, you know, it's got some little bits of some of the famous lines in there. So there's little nods to the movie. Even the different acts have different, if you want to imagine it, you can imagine yourself going through the different acts of the film, you know? And so, yes, it may be a name only, but it's just enough to make you think about what you're doing and when you're doing it, in my opinion. But you're right, by and large, you're not playing the Godfather. That is just the shell, the arena of which you're doing these other things, trying to vie for control of the city.
I actually think that in some ways that's kind of a positive, by the mm-hmm. way, in me saying that. What I wish, though, is you would have done one or the other. If it's a Godfather game, make it a Godfather game. If it's a mafia themed game, do something just generic mafia. I think it actually turned off a lot of people from this game. People that would have played this if it was just more of a generic, but they're like, I don't care anything about Godfather. Well, they might still like this one, because it's not really, I mean, you can play it without knowing the text, you know, the lines from the movie. Without knowing that, you wouldn't miss anything from those cards. I do think it adds to it, and I like that it's there, that it has the lines on there. But going back to the thematic piece, it feels thematic in the interaction, because I'm collecting these things, I'm going around, I'm shaking down these businesses, I'm starting trouble, I'm gaining, you know, I'm looking over here and Darren's starting to gain a little bit of traction over in this territory that I control. And so I need to make sure that I'm kind of muscling him out, or I'm, you know, putting some of my guys in there, or actually forcing him out, whatever. You know, I like all the interaction with that. This has interactions in spades.
Yeah, and some of those interactions come from the jobs, which we've talked about can be painful, whether it be a car bomb or a drive-by. And of course, your characters thematically end up in the Hudson River. They're on the board because they're swimming with the fishes. And that interaction can be harsh, but you can recover from that. It's never devastating. Can it be a setback? Yes, but you don't feel overwhelmed by it. At least I haven't in my time with it. Unlike maybe another game we may be talking about here in a few minutes. But yes, other thematic parts of that, like again, taking a mechanism like, okay, having to discard your hand down to a certain limit, you thematicize that, if that's even a word, by making that your tribute to the Dawn phase, because, you know, you cannot have too much excess. The Dawn's, you know, going to control that. So you have to discard a hand. And that can be painful, especially if you've done a lot this round to build some stuff up. And some things just kind of fall your way. I got all these resources, but now I've got to get rid of them. Maybe even my ally cards. I have bid money to get these ally cards. I've bribed the mayor, or I've bribed the crime boss or the police chief. But now I have to make decisions. Am I going to complete this job, or am I going to hang on to this ally because I might need them? And the allies are amazing too, because you're not the only one that may have that allied card. Somebody else may have a police chief or a mayor, and they can move them as well. I love the fact that the allies are neutral characters that others can control from time to time, and how from the acts of the movie, they become even more powerful and more special. Or the police chief might gun down somebody in Act Two, but he's going to gun down everybody in Act Four, you know? So it's a, that whole combining of thematics with the gameplay really makes this game stand out, I feel like.
Yeah. Yeah. I totally agree with that. I think that's so cool. The more I talk about this game, the more I just want to play this one. I was happy to hear that you did like this so much. By the way, there's a ton of things that I can talk about in this game, but I've already done that a lot. This is my number four game of all time. You've right. heard me talk about this for years. And if not, you can always go back and hear some of my thoughts on a lot of episodes in the past. But Darren, how much do you like it? A lot.
I like it a lot. You want my score now, or do you want to save it for the end?
We can save that. We can save that for the end when we do the comparison piece, I guess. But I'm just excited to know, like, is this a possible, this could make your big list of 50?
I will say this right now. I think, at least again, right now, I think I like it better than Blood Rage. If we're comparing Eric Lane,
that's
area
too far.
Control,
you took it too far.
Now, granted, I've not played Blood Rage with the different expansions and those types of things. I've just played the base game, and that may again improve for me with some of the other stuff added in. But just base to base, I would rather play in the Godfather world than Vikings, and I like how these thematic interactions take place. So that's what I'll say for now.
Okay, that's good. That's acceptable, but. Know that we both like Godfather, and again, my number four of all time. So I don't mind giving my score to 10, because if it's that high, it's going to be a 10 for me. All those things, interaction, cool gameplay, Euro-y hybrid game. Mm-hmm. It is a Euro game, but it's also Amerithrashy. I love the hybrid games, and Eric Lang is kind of the king of that, I think.
Yeah, if he's not, he definitely has made a great case for himself in that realm.
Yes. All right, let's look at Scarface 1920, which is a game that just released this last year. This was a top 10 game if you just listened to our episode a couple weeks ago. This is by designers Tony Saradesen Firm and Daniel Simon. The publisher is Red Zen Games. They actually just kickstarted, or whatever you call it, game founded some expansion materials for this not that long ago. But the game is a little difficult to find, I think. I think it's mostly going to be this game found method of playing. This one is a little more involved in the rule set, so I'm not going to go through all of the different actions and orders that you can take, but I will kind of give you a general idea. In this game, you are going to be taking actions from the cards that you have in your hand. This is a bit of a deck builder. Maybe think if you've played, what's a good comparison? Endless Winter might be a good comparison as far as the deck building piece goes. I don't know.
I can see that, perhaps. Yeah.
So it is deck building, but it's not like a normal deck builder that you would think, I guess. You're going to get less cards. So you're going to take cards from your hand based on what your gang stats are. So if your gang stats at the beginning of the game, they'll start off with three cards. So you'll have three cards in your hand. As the game goes on, if you unlock some of those, some of your different stats, one of those could be your hand size, and you can have more cards. So you can have four or five cards that would be in your hand. You're going to lay out cards into a plan, and that's going to be determine the different actions that you're going to take for that round. Now, you don't have to play out all the cards. And in fact, most of the time, many times, you're not going to be playing all the cards from your hand. You're just going to be playing maybe one or two. If you do play more, you're going to draw some attention from the coppers. And so you're going to have to move up your crime stats. Okay. So you don't want to draw too much attention to yourself. You lay out your plan, you take your actions. The actions are the skills that are on the cards. So the different wording that are on the cards, the different actions. Then you look at, your stats at the top. It's either got your muscle or your influence. And you are going to take actions in order, one order, based on those stats that are listed at the top. So some of those might be recruiting, which is moving your little your miniatures over. I'll talk about that in just a little bit. You can, let's see, lots of other things. You can reduce your crime rate. That's one thing I just mentioned. You can get deals, which are giving you your resources of booze and guns. You can sell those booze and guns for money, and which is how you're going to win the game, by getting the most money. You can put your miniatures out on the board for territory control and seize control of different neighborhoods. Lots of different things that you can do with those different orders. A lot. I mentioned probably a quarter of the ones that you can take. So you're going to look at your sheet and see what you want to do. Some of those are pretty valuable to be able to take those actions. So if I wanted to, for example, if I wanted to hire an associate, which is gaining a new card into my deck, well, I'm going to have to take one of my miniatures from the hideout and put them to the underworld, which is, it is what it is. You have to do that to get those cards, but it can hurt you because that's one less miniature you have that can go out onto the board. And not only that, but if they're in the underworld, at the end of the round, they're going to go to prison and you have to try to release them to prison from prison based on your lawyer level. If you're thinking, wow, this is a lot of rules. Hey, Darren, this is a lot of rules. This no is question. A lot of rules. I'm going to stop there because just know there's lots of different things that you can do. A ton. I mean, you're going to put out markers into your neighborhoods. Basically, you're building up your neighborhood so you can put like a nightclub out there. You can put a brothel out there. Lots of different things that you can put out there that's going to give you more and more money as the game goes on. Whoever has the most money at the end of the game is going to be the winner. Whew. Talk about art and components, and we'll get into some of the gameplay.
The art and components of this game, where, and not that I'm making comparisons yet, but this one is obvious, where in The Godfather, it was sort of a mixed bag. This one, I feel like, hands down, top to bottom, art and components are amazing. Now, granted, the production that we have played, we played Dean's copy. This was a Kickstarter copy. Correct. This was crowdfunded. This had deluxe components because this is not a retail game, correct?
The answer is yes. But honestly, for the most part, it's not deluxe components. That's just what you get. The money tokens, I upgraded those. Okay. And then there's a miniature for the newsboy. And I think that's it. That's mostly it. Everything else is pretty much like what you get. Oh, in the ring. I think the ring is just normally a cardboard token, not one that you actually wear.
So at least in Dean's fancy version, we had plastic dollar bills, basically, right? I mean, that's just stacks and stacks of plastic cash.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
And there were, and the miniatures are gorgeous, and well done, well detailed, lots of variety there, especially as I look at the page for their Kickstarter that ended recently that will be delivering, I want to say, in December of this year, in theory. The miniatures look great. The detail is there. The card art is phenomenal. The fonts, how it all just streams together. Everything looks like it came out of a newspaper or a wanted sign from the 1920s. The only thing I would say, I guess, if I had to knock, the board isn't the prettiest.
It's ugly, actually. I would say that. Yeah, it's an ugly board, but that's one of like the only complaints I have about it too.
Yeah. Yeah. I was very impressed and blown away by the arts and components of this one. Oh, and the game trays, the storage solution for this, it came with game trays, which was also very, very handy.
Yeah. Because it is one of those games that I can just take that out and give you your pieces and you're ready to set up and go. Yep. Except it doesn't play quite as simply as, you know, a Marvel Dice Throne, for example.
Yeah, so which does, again, as we're talking about arts components and Marvel Dice Throne, nice callback. What about the rule book of this one? You taught me this game. How was the rule book of this or for this?
It's wordy. I'll say that. It's pretty wordy. Okay. I appreciate what they were trying to do, and that is let us be as clear as we possibly can. So this is a 32-page rule book. I'm looking at it online. The first several pages are just showing your components and things like that. So the first five pages, you get to the setup in page 6. It's locked up on me now. And then there's several pages. I can't see it right now, but there's several pages that just give you all of the general information that you need to know. So before we teach you the game, we're going to lay out all the cards and all the information on the cards. And every one of these, like, just general overview, nitpicky type of things. Then we're going to go through the rules. We're going to take you through all the actions. And it's fine in that sense. I appreciate that for the most part. If I need to go back and look something up, I know where to find it fairly easy at this point. But I don't know. There has to be a balance in there of there has to be a balance of like being able to find things easy, but also not being so wordy so that you don't have to be that way. This is one of those games that is not streamlined down for anybody. It's like, here's what it is, deal with it. And so it's a lot. There's a lot of rules to know, a lot.
Yeah. And well, almost jumped into gameplay there for a second, but I know that I felt that way as you were teaching me. You did a great job of teaching, but there was a lot for my brain to soak in at once, because there are lots of things that you can do in this one. There's lots of pretty things to look at. And so I don't know if you're ready, if you want to go ahead and talk about the gameplay, but, oh, I'm sorry. One more thing about arts and components, the buildings on this are you're like control markers. Basically your buildings, each crime family has their own buildings. They're going to put on these different tiles, and those are unique and cool. And the different, I know one upgrade that you had in yours was the Bakelite building tiles, the brothel, the casino.
Those, oh, right. Yeah.
Those building markers, I think, are like the Bakelite really cool disc, as opposed to the cardboard tokens in the regular retail, or I guess in just the undeluxe version.
Yeah, there you go. That is right. I would say the undeluxe version is still very deluxe compared to other productions out there, for sure.
No question. There's still cars and trucks made of plastic and copper cars. You're going to move around the board, and all that looks glorious. It definitely has great table presence regardless of what version you have.
Yeah, absolutely. Okay, so into the gameplay. We've touched on this. I think this kind of needs to be a starting point, and that is just knowing going into this one, you're not going to be able to go in playing this one like you can go in and play Godfather, Corleone's Empire. Somebody's going to have a good grasp of the rules. The play that Darren and I got, that was my first play of it, and I did not quite have the full-on grasp of the rules. And that was after kind of teaching myself, setting up the game, playing a week or two before that. There were still several things that I had forgotten along the way, because there's just really weird rules in here. And one of those is, when you do certain things in the different districts, if there's a cop there, then you have to pay $2 for that cop. Or if you move into a district where there's a cop, you have to pay a $2 bribe. Things like that that aren't really fully laid out on your player aid that you just need to remember. When you take an associate, that's going to go into your discard pile, which is normal. Unless you want to pay booze, and then you can put it into your hand, which is not something that you might naturally remember. There's a lot of those rules. And again, I mentioned that you've got your player aid that shows you all these different actions that you can take. Well, all those are laid out, but they're not explained what you do. So you have a set of orders. There's five sets of orders sending one of your thugs to the underworld. There's five of those. Then you have five orders that you can choose from where you send one of your thugs to the authorities, which is another section on the board, and you get them back later on. And then just five actions that you can take, you know, 15 actions on these different orders on top of the actions that are already on your cards that you have to wade through. Once you play through a round or two, it becomes a little more intuitive because it is thematic, but just know that it's tricky. And I would say even a slog to get through the first part of the game, just trying to wrap your head around all the things that you can do.
Yeah, and I know that I really wrestled with that. I love the fact that there is a player aid that tells you, okay, to do this action, you need to do this. To this action, you need to do this. There are several actions on there, and they are all very thematic. You know, like Dean just mentioned, you know, you've got to put a character. You have to recruit characters from the slums into your, like, you know, warehouse, and take characters from your warehouses and put them in your ability to be able to send them out onto the board. And then you got to put them into the underworld, or to, you know, the authorities, be able to take certain actions. All those things work out very thematically, but it's a lot kind of soaking in at once. And then the icons, at least for me, this is probably just a me thing, not so much a game thing. like the muscle influence icons at the beginning, at the very top of your cards, when you're trying to lay out your plan, which is not necessarily the best language, but when you're laying out your plan, which is basically just taking cards in your hand that you're thinking about playing, those influence and muscle cards would allow you to do certain actions. To me, my eyes kept mixing those up. Those icons are so similar and so close together on the cards. There was at least once or twice, Dean, I didn't tell you, but I mixed that up and I probably took an action that I shouldn't have taken because I misread the card.
Oh, wow. Okay.
So the iconography and the colors there just blended for me a couple of times. And I just, because I'm trying not to slow things down. I'm trying to move things, you know, move them along as quickly as possible because there's just a lot to soak in. And to me, that was confusing. It makes it, you know, again, you can really slow down here trying to figure out what to do. Just take an action and go with it and see what happens.
Yeah, that wasn't my experience with those, but there's a lot of other areas that I definitely struggled with. The cool thing about this, though, is that because there's so many different things you can do, it's not as linear as, again, I'm comparing it to Godfather. Godfather is pretty linear in what you do. You're just doing these different, taking these different actions to gain resources, to do stuff and blow things up or whatever, based on the cards that you have. This one, it just kind of, it's almost open world in the sense of there's so many different ways that you can go. And part of that, I didn't even mention this, but you take on the role of a different gang, and you have a gang leader. So you have Al Capone, whose actions that you take with that boss, mob boss card or whatever it's called, are different for this gang leader than the other gang leaders. And it's got five options. And when you play that card, you get to choose three of those five options. So there's so many different things that you can do, but it's cool because having that gang leader might steer you in a direction of things that you want to do. You might focus on kind of spreading out on the board, but maybe not. You might focus on getting more associates into your gang. You might focus on getting more jobs completed. You might focus on getting more deals completed, which give you more resources and allow you to sell some of those bigger, make some of those, you know, bigger sales in the neighborhoods. That's cool. All that's cool. And I like the fact that you can do lots of different things. If you try to spread yourself out too thin, try to do too much, one, it's going to be maybe confusing, especially for your first play. But I think maybe you might not be able to do all the things that you want to do. So I think you need to focus on a couple of areas.
Yeah, for sure. Those boss powers all feel broken. Like, as you look at the bosses of the different games, they're very powerful, but you're like, there's no way you get to do that. Oh man, that's not fair. And then you'd take your boss action. The other guy goes, oh, you got to do that, man. That's pretty powerful. So yeah, I do love that aspect. And each family does end up kind of nudging you in certain directions. And one of my favorite parts about the bosses in your gang, your family, is that you can upgrade. You can take actions to upgrade your boss, and there's basically this track on your player board that you're moving your boss along, and you just keep removing your cubes from the upgrade part of your board onto your ability part of your board. And that's going to upgrade various things, make your boss more powerful as they gain more influence. And it's going to give you some other bonuses as you go along. The fact that you can upgrade your family, your gang, I thought that was really cool and really clever. I didn't do much of it, but I thought it was pretty cool and clever, and just, it makes me want to go back and try to play more with those families and see how you can manipulate some of that and then try another family and see how they work. There's lots to explore in this game. I think there's some endless gameplay opportunities here because of the sandboxy kind of nature that you were talking about earlier.
Yeah. Yeah. I agree with that. I think there's lots of different areas to go. The gang leader part becomes very important. But again, it's another thing to have to think about in the game.
Right.
But yeah. In the sense of, I'm kind of thinking Western Legends is one that this game is nothing like Western Legends, but the idea that there's so much stuff that you can do, you just have to figure out what you want to do. What do I want my gang to do, Darren? Do I want to be focused on taking people out? Do I want to be focused on running this underground business of selling booze in Prohibition era? You can do all that. You just have to figure out what you want to do.
And to almost think you need more players to be able to figure some of that out. We played a two-player game together. And again, that's been my only play of this was that. So take what I say with a grain of salt. This thing plays 1-4. Then I feel like both you and I said, because when we played this, we did very little interaction with one another. We hardly messed with each other because we were too busy trying to figure out everything else that we were trying to do, you know, and didn't want to be that guy to ruin everything. Because the game does enough of that. The game does enough of ruining everything for you anyway. We'll put a pin in that and come back to that in just a minute. But from a gameplay standpoint, I feel like you need more players with this. You played solo, so I don't know. We played it too. I feel like this needs 3 or 4 in order to experience all the stuff this game wants you to experience.
Yep, totally agree with that. Godfather's the same way. I think both of these you need to have a higher player count. Godfather, let me step back there for a second. 5 is too many for Godfather. The game lasts too long. But 4 is the sweet spot. 4. I would say 4 is a sweet spot for that one. But this one, I think you need to have at least 3 to be able to kind of spread out onto the map a little bit more. I'm ready to move into my thoughts on this one, though, Darren. We've gone, this is going to be a really long episode, so.
No, it's not, because you're going to edit all that unnecessary stuff out, right?
Maybe so. So what do you think? Let's compare these two. What's the best one?
Man, that's so tough. I think they are both very thematic. I love the actions that you can take in both, and the things that you can do are incredibly interesting. And like I said, there is more to explore in Scarface 1920. I can sit down and just look at the cards. There's a whole deck of cards that we never saw, where all the Godfather cards are the same, with just the same ugly iconography. The Scarface cards are beautiful. The art is crazy. There's tons of jobs that you can do. Some of them even a little inappropriate. So keep in mind, I want to say this is a 14 plus game. There is a reason. Some of the cards are not for small children. There is a few roles there that are a little unsavory, and some of the art depicts that. So just be mindful of some of that. Dean wouldn't show those to me. I'm not old and mature enough to look at those.
I feel embarrassed to have them on the table if there's people walking by, to be completely honest with you. I'm glad you said that, because I totally forgot to say that. But there's several that I'm like, but you could have. It's fine to do the roles. It's just like the artwork could have been tamer. It is a game. I mean, I get like the, right. You know, it is what it is, I guess. But I just wish the art was a little tamer on some of the cards.
And one thing we didn't come back to yet that I want to mention in my comparison here is that this game is punishing, at least the version that we played, because you have these news events that will come out at the end of each round, and those news events will affect everybody. And the worst, the most painful news events that you can imagine came out in our game. First off, Chicago caught fire. And everything burned. So like we lost all of our control buildings, like half of our buildings we had to control. You lose them all. And then like the stock market crashed. And so we lost all of our, like half of all of our money. And these are like 2 rounds back to back. And that was really hard to recover from in a game that's only 3 rounds. The Godfather is not like that. You can get car bombed. There can be a drive-by. You can still recover. You may lose control of one of your turfs. But at the very end of the game, you're going to get money for whoever has the most control there. And you're still going to get a bonus for something if you're the one on top. So you can recover from disaster, I feel like, in The Godfather a whole lot better. With as difficult as a game as Scarface 1920 is, BGG has it listed at 3.75, where Godfather's like 2.6 or something, if I'm not mistaken. There is a weight difference there and an accessibility and approachability to Godfather that Scarface doesn't have. Scarface is much more interesting, much more punishing. The raids, we didn't even talk about the raids. The raids can destroy people. When Elliot Ness's marker gets far enough up that crime track and the FBI comes in and raids, oh man, again, there's another way you can just get destroyed.
Yeah. Now that you can mitigate a little bit more, as opposed to those events that they just happen. They just happen.
Right. Very true. But again, Godfather, I feel like, doesn't have the depth of exploration that Scarface has. I love the card play in Scarface once you figure it out. But the approachability and the streamlineness of Godfather is where I really wrestle with this. I want the Godfather to have the art and depth of Scarface, but I want Scarface to have the streamlined, complex nature of the Godfather. So I'm very torn here, but I'm going to give you a score. right now, I'm going to give both of these an 8. They're both an 8. I can't decide. I feel like more plays, I will be able to make a good, solid, conscious decision. One that I can, you know, lay my head down at night and sleep well with. But right now, they are both 8s. They are both great games. I would play any of them happily and look forward to playing more of them in depth because they both do something that I want the other one to do. And it's hard to pick at the moment.
I think that's fair. Those are really great points. Really a lot of the same ones that I would make, Darren, other than the fact that because of the streamlinedness, that's what elevates Godfather up so high for me. It is a very approachable game. I think if you're playing with the right group that is okay with this kind of interaction, because you're just blowing stuff up, but everybody's doing it. Some of it's pointed. Now I will, you know, it's not like you're randomly blowing things up. No, you're actually picking the areas that you're blowing up and the people that you're taking out. So you can be mean. It is the theme. It's a mean theme. So if you're okay with that, I think that's fantastic. Scarface, yes, all those same things that you said. Now, Scarface was a top game of the year for me last year. I may have sounded a little ho-hum on this, but I really, really enjoy this game. It's just the rule part that I'm like, there's some things I just wish weren't there. The ring. If you control the ring at the beginning of your turn, you're going to take a dollar. That is an easy thing to forget. It's things like that. I'm like, okay, you could have just left that out and it wouldn't have changed a whole lot, I think. You know, I mean, it's now you're vying for it because you get the ring by gaining more associates. So I guess that kind of pushes you in a direction to take and gain more of those associates so you can gain the ring. But there's things like that that I'm like, you could have streamlined this a little bit more to make it more approachable, but still not lost the element of exploration, the element of different strategies that you can take. There's so many things that, and maybe I could have take a whole episode and just kind of break down some of those things that I thought, here's what I would have liked for you to streamline. But it is what it is, and I like it where it is. I just wish maybe if there was a game that fits somewhere between these two. One that is more sandboxy, that you can do lots of different things, but also streamlined, that would be the sweet spot, I think. Because ultimately, I think Scarface is probably more thematic.
Mm-hmm.
So yeah. I would like to have more of the theme element that Godfather doesn't have. It is thematic, but just in a different way, I guess. It may be abstract theme.
Yep. No, agreed.
So yeah, if there's a game that was somewhere in there, that would be awesome. I would love that a lot. But as it is, Godfather's a 10 for me. I didn't give Scarface is probably more like an 8.5. I'm a little bigger on this one too, maybe than you. I love Scarface. It's just tough. It's going to be tough to find the right people to play this one, and then also to teach all those people. So if you can find the same group to play this with all the time, that's the way to go.
Yeah. And you know, again, I think they're both great games, but Dean, what if someone is not into the whole mobster theme? Are there some games that we might suggest to them that could give some of the same vibe, some of the same feels, but maybe not as complex or as streamlined or as thematic as this? What are some other games we might suggest?
So Godfather, I would suggest the other Eric Lang games probably, or some other more thematic worker placement game. I just talked about Yido a few weeks ago, I think. Yido could be one that kind of fits in that is the worker placement part. But then the other Eric Lang, if you're looking for the, not the worker placement part, but the actual like player interaction and the area control, those, the Eric Lang trilogy, the Ankh, Rising Sun, and Blood Rage, as well as like an El Grande. For Scarface, this might be an interesting comparison, but I'm going to go back to the Endless Winter, or maybe Dune Imperium, maybe one of those that has the deck building element, but it's not fully about the deck building. It's also other stuff that's going on. You've got the combat that happens in Dune Imperium, along with the worker placement and different things that you're doing on that one. Endless Winter, there's lots of different things going on, but deck building kind of drives that. What do you think?
Yeah, no, I love all those suggestions. The only thing that I would add to that is maybe also something like an Inish or Cyclades, that and you know and maybe Kemet. I'm not as big on Kemet as you are, but that trilogy of games from Matago that are also area control in their own way, but like Inish has, again, some very clever card play and card drafting there, and Cyclades has that auction bidding mechanic where you get to auction and bid, or yeah, you can kind of have that auction bidding in Godfather. We're trying to get the allies. You have that too in Cyclades. They try to win favor for the gods. So those are also some games that are similar to this. They all carry varying degrees of production values. They all have really deluxe production values if you want those, or more scaled down production values too. But all of them are high quality productions that go along with this that I think just make it even more thematic. So whatever you're looking for, you've got some options there.
Yep. I agree with that. So that is it. I mean, I think both of us really like these games. Check them out. Hopefully this will give you an idea. If you like more complex thematic and you're okay learning the heavier rules, Scarface might be the game for you. If you want something that has the theme, but maybe want it to be a little more family friendly, not family friendly, but, you know, group friendly, people who might not be into the heavier games, then Godfather might be the pick for you. Both can be a lot of fun in the right circumstances. That's going to do it for this episode. If you would like to connect with us, you can send us a message. Go to meepletowngames.com for all of our information. You can send an email to meepletownmail@gmail.com. Connect with us in all of our social media outlets like X and Instagram and Facebook at Meepletown Games. And definitely connect with us on the Discord and Meepletown Guilds on BoardGameGeek.com, guild number 3407. Until next time, thanks for coming down to Meepletown.
Later. Here endeth the lesson.